an efficiency expert was giving a lecture to a group of MBA students, sharing with them various techniques, efficiency techniques that can be applied in business and management. As the expert was concluding their remarks, they said to the students, "Now, I want to warn you not to apply these techniques at home." "Why not?" one of the students asked. "Well," the expert said, "I'll give you an example." He said, "For years, I watched my wife as she would go through her routine of preparing our breakfast each morning, and it would kind of bother me because her routine was very inefficient. She would grab one thing from the fridge and bring it over the counter, go back to the fridge, grab another thing, take it to the oven, so on and so forth. So one morning," he says, "I said to her, 'Honey, it would be a lot more efficient if you would carry multiple things at once in a pre-planned pattern.'" The student said, "Well, did that save time?" "Actually, it did," the expert said. "It used to take my wife 20 minutes to prepare my breakfast. Now I do it in 7. When someone gives you advice, how do you typically respond? Are you able to hear it? And when you want to give advice to somebody, do you? And if so, how do you do it? Those are the questions we're going to wrestle with today as we continue in our sermon series on how to build beautiful relationships the Jesus way. Believe it or not, Jesus had a lot to teach us about how to communicate in our relationships, not just spousal relationships, but relationships with children, parents, siblings, extended family, folks at church, in our workplace, in our neighborhoods. Jesus had a lot to teach us about how to communicate in our relationships. Tony Gaskins puts it this way: communication to a relationship is like oxygen is to life. Without it, it dies. And when it comes to communication, the ability to speak the truth and receive the truth, even when the truth is hard to speak or receive, is critically important. We cannot build strong relationships unless we are willing to offer and receive honest feedback. So, let's talk about that today, starting with a prayer. Jesus, you came to show us the way, the truth, and the life. Not just the way to life in heaven, but also the way to make our life here on earth more like heaven, including our relationships. So please teach us something important today so that we can become more like you, and so that we can live more fully into the gift of life that you've given us. We ask this in your powerful name, the name of Jesus. Amen. On March the 15th, 44 BC, Julius Caesar's wife, Calpurnia, warned him to stay home. Don't leave the house. Don't go to the Senate like you normally would. Because the night before, she had been plagued by nightmares of his murder. A Roman seer had already warned Julius Caesar to beware of the Ides of March. But now, on the morning of March 15th, 44 BC, Julius Caesar refused to listen to his wife or to that Roman seer, and per usual made his way to the Roman Senate, where in the well of the Senate he was suddenly surrounded by a group of conspirators who stabbed him 23 times, stabbed him to death, including his close ally, Brutus. If only Julius Caesar had listened to his wife and that Roman seer, Roman history would have been different, and world history would have been different. But this isn't just about history. It's also very personal. As you know, Steve Jobs was the primary founder of Apple, one of the most brilliant business leaders and innovators in our generation. When he was 53 years old, in a routine scan for kidney stones, doctors noticed a speck on his pancreas that was diagnosed as cancer. But fortunately for him, it was a form of pancreatic cancer, one of the few forms of pancreatic cancer that is imminently treatable. And so they recommended immediate surgery, but Steve Jobs refused the surgery. He would later tell his biographer, before he passed away, that there was just something about his body being cut open that he couldn't bear the thought. He was kind of phobic about it. And he had this intuition that holistic methods could bring him back to health. Changing his diet, drinking lots of fruit juices, getting acupuncture. His wife begged him to get the surgery. His doctors begged him to have the surgery, but he stubbornly refused to listen to them, trusting his intuition, because after all, his intuition had served him so well in business. Many, many times he had had an idea and somebody would say, oh, that's impossible or that's not practical, but he would trust his intuition and do it, and it happened. And so now he was trusting his intuition. For 9 long months, he refused surgery. When he finally agreed to have the surgery, it was too late. The cancer had spread throughout his body. And within a year, at the age of 54, he was gone. If only he had listened to his wife and his doctors, he'd probably still be with us today. He could have had so many more experiences in his life. He could have accomplished so much more than he even did. And our lives would be even more different. The world would be even more different because of that. But he could not, or at least would not, listen. Brothers, sisters, siblings, that's what's at stake in what we are talking about today. Am I, are you able to hear the honest feedback of the people around us? It's a life or death matter. And I don't mean by that so much how long we live, but how well we live, the quality of our life. There's a gospel story where we're told a prosperous young man came to Jesus one day to ask him the ultimate question. Teacher, he said, what must I do to inherit eternal life? Now, this was a young man who was already on a deep spiritual journey, so much so he was able to look Jesus in the eye and sincerely say to Jesus, from the time I was a child, I have kept the commandments to the best of my ability. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Honor your mother and your father. Love your neighbors yourself. He was able to look Jesus in the eye and say sincerely, from the time I was a child, I have tried to my best to keep those commandments, but still this young man sensed that something was lacking. And so he says to Jesus, what do I still lack? You know what they say, be careful what you ask for. He was asking Jesus, tell me honestly, what do I still lack? And Jesus didn't hold back. He gave him a straightforward, honest answer. Jesus said to the young man, Matthew 19:21, if you wish to be complete, go sell your possessions. Give the money to the poor and you'll have treasure in heaven. Then come, follow me. It's as if Jesus had driven a knife in that young man's heart. He was putting his finger on the one thing that he could not bear to think of surrendering: his possessions. Jesus wasn't asking him to sell his possessions for the sake of selling his possessions. He was asking him to do that so that he could give resources to the poor and bless them, but then be free to pull up stakes and follow him. You see what Jesus was saying? If you'll let go of your possessions, you'll find significance. Jesus was giving this man the opportunity of a lifetime. He was inviting him to become the 13th disciple. You've heard of the 12 disciples? There could have been 13. Jesus was inviting this young man to liquidate his assets so that he could follow, travel around with Jesus, become one of the 12. Now the 13, who would be the inner core that were destined to change the world forever. This was his big moment. If only he could have heard and embraced the truth that Jesus was sharing with him. But he missed his moment. This is what is at stake. Are you able to hear the honest feedback of the people around you? When the young man heard this word, he went away grieving, for he had many possessions. He just couldn't hear it. The scriptures tell us, fools think their own way is right, but the wise listen to advice. The scriptures tell us, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. Any old friend can tell us what we want to hear, but it takes a true friend. It takes somebody who really cares about us to tell us what we don't want to hear or what we can't bring ourselves to hear. About 15 years ago, I was sitting in my office here at the church on a Friday night, about 8:30, trying to wrap things up so that everything would be ready for Sunday, when the phone rang. I made the mistake of answering it. At the other end of the line was a congregant of ours, still an active congregant of ours. We exchanged pleasantries, and then she said to me, "You're probably wondering why I'm calling you late on a Friday." I said, "Yeah, well, what's up?" She said, "I just have had this sense that there's something that I'm supposed to say to you. And it's hard to say." So I'm thinking to myself in this moment, "Oh, no. Please, can't this wait till or at least next week?" I didn't say that, but that's what I was thinking. "Oh, why did I answer the phone?" I said, "Okay, what is it?" She said, "Well, this is hard to say, but to be blunt, Jeff," she said, "there are a lot of people who think you're two-faced." Talk about a knife to the heart, right? I mean, that's the last thing I would ever want to be. I've known some hypocritical pastors. It ain't a pretty thing. And that's the last thing I would ever want to be. And here is someone I love and respect, who loves and respects me, telling me what you need to hear is that there are a lot of people who think you're two-faced. I said, "Tell me what that means." She said, "Well, when you're up on the platform and you're sharing a sermon, you're gregarious, you're warm, you're emotionally open. But Jeff, the moment you're off the platform, it's like you're a different person. You become an introvert and you're emotionally closed and you're very quiet." And I said to her, "So-and-so, you know me. You know that I'm an extreme introvert. I said, I can't explain it. When I'm on the platform giving a sermon, I guess it's because I have a job to do, a job for God. So I stretch myself outside of my comfort zone. And the person you see up there, it's the real me, but it's also the real me that you see off the platform, that extreme introvert. I could have been a desert monk who lives in trees and been perfectly happy. I'll never forget what she said to me next. She said, Jeff, that's not good enough. And I'm thinking to myself, when did God die and you got appointed God? Who are you to be the boss of me? Who are you to judge me? That's what I was thinking, not what I said. We went back and forth, not in an argumentative way, but in a I think you think way for about 15 minutes. And then I thanked her. I promised that I would pray about what she said. When we hung up, my first thoughts were, poor me. Here I am sitting at the desk, 8:30 on a Friday, nothing I wouldn't do for this church, and she's got the nerve to call me and tell me it's not good enough. Poor me. But by the next morning, as I began to pray and listen, I sensed the Spirit of God saying to me, Jeff, you need to listen to her. And so I began to think and pray, and I sensed the Spirit of God saying to me, you need to take the same energy you feel when you're sharing a sermon and channel that into your one-on-one interactions. And for some reason, that flicked a switch in my brain, and I thought, I can do that. And so I started practicing that. Now, Lord knows I'm far from perfect. I am still an extreme introvert. It's easy for me to go into the screensaver mode, you know, completely within. But with time, I've gotten better. And that means my ministry has been more effective, which I am passionate about. And that means there are people that I could have, would have driven away from faith, who maybe have been able to find faith, all because that person had the courage and took the risk of saying something hard that she knew I wouldn't want to hear but needed to hear. And I will be eternally grateful to her for doing that. Not just in this life, but a billion years from now in heaven, as we cross paths, I'll still be saying to her, thank you for that time. You took the risk, because the thing you said to me was one of the most formative things anybody ever said in my life's ministry, and that made a difference for me, and that made a difference for people that I impacted. I am so grateful for you. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Or, as Paul Cedar says, my most painful experiences have been when I had a problem and no one loved me enough to tell me about it. That bears repeating, right? My most painful experiences have been when I had a problem and no one loved me enough to tell me about it. Jesus himself said, when you know the truth will make you free. So opening ourselves to honest feedback, it's not about hurting ourselves. It's not about depriving ourselves. It's about opening ourselves up to receive gifts that will allow us to live more fully into the gift of life that God has given to us. Am I? Are you willing and able to hear, ponder, and consider the honest feedback from people that God brings into your life, in things large and in ways small? Just a month or so ago, I was reading about a real estate investment trust, an REIT. You see them, they're like mutual funds that invest in real estate. A real estate investment trust that specializes in owning and operating premier properties in Egypt. And this real estate investment trust was earning amazing returns for its investors. So I asked my financial advisor, do you think I should put some of my retirement money in that real estate investment trust? that specializes in these Egyptian properties, my financial advisor says, I don't know, Jeff. It sounds like it could be a pyramid scheme to me. We need the advice of other people in our life. In my last annual physical with my doctor, I said, Doc, tell me how I can live to be 100. The doctor said, well, tell me, do you smoke? Do you drink? Do you chase wild women? I said, no, definitely no. The doctor said to me, then why would you want to live to be 100? Never thought about it that way before. And not all the advice is the best, but at least evaluate it. Some of the best advice anybody ever gave to me was a friend who said, Jeff, never date a tennis player. I said, why? They said, because to tennis players, love is nothing. Explain to your neighbor if they don't play tennis that love in tennis means zero. Love 30, zero to 30. I'm getting some feedback right now. And I think I'll listen to it and move on, all right? So the question on the table is, am I willing to listen with an open heart when people tell me hard things? But now let's flip the question and ask the opposite. Do I love the people around me enough to give them the same gift, the gift of honest feedback? Because I don't know about you, but for me, and I suspect many of us, as hard as it is to hear honest feedback, I find it even harder to give it. Because I want people to like me. And if you tell people something they don't want to hear, they may not like you as much. Plus, I know how much it hurts when someone tells you something you don't want to hear. And I don't want to hurt people like that. Plus, I hate conflict. And when you tell people something they don't want to hear, sometimes that can stir up conflict. So for all those reasons and more, I suspect many of us are the kind of people who avoid giving honest feedback to people. Maybe somebody else will tell them. Maybe they'll figure it out on their own. It's not my problem. It's none of my business. But then along comes Jesus and says, Jeff, that's not good enough. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, in everything, do to others what you'd have them do to you. So in the final analysis, if someone has some honest feedback to offer you, even though you know it might hurt, would you want them to share that with you? Yeah, I would. Then Jesus says, do that for others too. Love them enough. Stretch yourself enough to take the risk of offering them the same gift, the opportunity to see what they cannot see or what they see but don't want to see. Will we love others? Pastor John Ortberg explains it this way. He says, imagine taking your car to the shop for routine inspection and maintenance. And after looking things over, your mechanic says to you, your car is in great shape. But later that day, your brakes fail and you almost die in an accident because you're out of brake fluid. So you go back to your mechanic and you say, why didn't you tell me? And your mechanic says, well, I didn't want to make you feel bad. Plus, to be honest, I was afraid you might get upset with me. I want this to be a safe place where you feel loved and accepted. If your mechanic did that to you, Ortberg says, you'd be furious. You'd say, I didn't come here for a little fantasy-based boost. When it comes to my car, I want the truth. Ortberg continues. He says, imagine going to the doctor's office for a checkup. The doctor says to you, you are a magnificent physical specimen. You have the body of an Olympian. Congratulations. But later that day, while climbing the stairs, You can barely catch your breath and you end up rushing to the hospital. They tell you that your arteries were so clogged, you're like one jelly donut away from the Grim Reaper. So you go back to your doctor and you say, "Why didn't you tell me?" And your doctor says, "I knew you were in worse shape than the Pillsbury Doughboy. But if I tell people stuff like that, they get offended. It's bad for business. They don't come back. I want this to be safe space where you feel affirmed." And again, you're furious. You say to your doctor, "When it comes to my health, I want the truth." In the final analysis, as hard as it is to hear honest feedback, we know we need it. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Do we love enough to offer that gift to others? But remember, it's not just being willing to say something to somebody. It's also how we say it. And once again in that, Jesus is our example. We see that example at work in the gospel story that Amy read for us right before today's sermon. I've always found this a fascinating story, not so much for the content of the story, but for the psychological, emotional, spiritual brilliance that Jesus exhibits for us to imitate in this story. You heard it read how Simon, who's a Pharisee, that means Simon the Pharisee was on a deep spiritual journey himself, striving to keep the commandments to the best of his ability. So Simon the Pharisee invites Jesus to a dinner party at his house. It's a chance for Jesus to kick back and relax, enjoy a great meal, a little stress relief from the constant demands of his ministry. I'm sure Jesus was looking forward to a night where he could just take a deep breath and not have to minister to people. So they're all sitting around the table, but back then the tables were like low to the ground, not like our tables, or sometimes the meal was on the ground and people would sit in a circle and they would recline on one arm, and with their other free arm they would feed themselves, and that means their feet would be sort of extended out away from the table. And so we're told that as this dinner party is underway and they're all around this table space, there was a woman who had the reputation of being a sinner who makes her way uninvited into the dinner party. And the text of our passage tells us she, this woman, brought an alabaster jar of ointment. She stood behind Jesus at his feet, weeping, and began to bathe his feet with her tears and dry them with her hair. And then as the story unfolds, she opens the alabaster jar and she pours that ointment, that expensive perfume, out on Jesus' feet. It was customary to anoint people's head when you wanted to honor somebody, but she was honoring not his head, his feet even, pouring it out on his feet. The aroma fills the room. And Jesus can't help but notice the expression that's on Simon's face. Simon didn't say anything, the text tells us, but he didn't have to, because Jesus, one glance at Simon's face, Jesus could read him. He could tell what Simon was thinking. Simon was looking at this woman, apparently with a scowl on his face, as if to say, "How dare you, a woman of ill repute, enter my dinner party, interrupt it, and are now touching my guest of honor. You do not belong here." Not just that, but from the look on Simon's face, Jesus could tell that Simon was also judging Jesus and thinking to himself, "How dare you, someone that I thought was a prophet? Don't you know what this woman's reputation is? If you were a real prophet, you would know, and you wouldn't let her touch you." And in that moment, I'm sure Jesus was tempted to just let it go. The last thing he needed was another stressful conversation when he was just trying to relax and have a good meal. But he loved too much to not speak up. He loved Simon too much not to help Simon see his spiritual blind spot, judgmentalism. And he loved this woman too much not to speak out against people judging her. So the text tells us, Jesus, quote, spoke up. I mean, he got in Simon's face. And he said, "You religious hypocrite. You think you know everything. You think you're so perfect." Right? And no, that's not what he did. The text says he spoke up, but he did it in a way that was calibrated that Simon might be able to hear it. So the text tells us, Jesus spoke up and said to him, "Simon, I have something to say to you." And then he pauses. And Simon says, "Teacher, speak." Brilliant! You see what Jesus did there? Jesus didn't just launch in to a conversation Simon didn't want to have and had no agency in. Instead, Jesus, in effect, said, "Simon, I have something to say to you. May I?" And Simon responded, "Teacher, speak." So now Simon was invested in the conversation. Now he had agency in the conversation. And that changes the whole psychological, emotional dynamic of the conversation. If you feel you need to say something heavy, something hard to somebody, steal a page out of Jesus' playbook. Don't just launch into it. Begin by saying, "So-and-so, there's something I think I need to say to you. May I?" 99.9% of the time, they're going to say, "Yeah, what is it?" And so now with that entree, Jesus is able to help Simon find his blind spot. Jesus explains to Simon that all he, Simon, can see are the sins of this woman, which were many. She, this woman, knew of her sins. And that's why she was so grateful for God's forgiveness. That's why she was there to thank Jesus. She felt it in her heart. But Jesus was pointing out to Simon that Simon too had sins. The sin of judgmentalism, which is probably worse than anything that woman had ever done. But Simon couldn't see it in there. Simon didn't feel like he needed to be forgiven or much, and therefore Simon didn't have much gratitude in his heart. This was missing, a big missing piece, a blind spot in his spiritual journey that Jesus was now pointing out to him so that Simon could make that course correction and live more fully into his spiritual life. Jesus offered him that gift. Are we willing? Do we love enough to offer that same gift to the people that God puts in our lives? Faithful are the wounds of a friend. The truth will make you free. Abraham Lincoln once put it this way: "It is a sin to be silent when it's your duty to protest." Now he was speaking of in the public arena. But that same principle applies in our personal lives. There are many times in our life where to be silent is a sin when God has put us in a situation where we have an opportunity to share some honest but difficult feedback with somebody who could really benefit from the opportunity to hear it. But couple what Lincoln said with what John Wooden once said. John Wooden, a legendary men's NCAA basketball coach, the winningest, I think he still holds the record for the most men's NCAA basketball championships ever won. An incredible coach who was the exact opposite of Bobby Knight. Wooden never threw a chair. He never raised his voice. He never got in any of his players' face. He had a very different approach. John Wooden once put it this way: "There's nothing stronger than gentleness." Just ask Jesus. When we speak the truth in love, that has the power to open up people to hear things that they desperately need to hear. I'll close with this. Years ago, when I was still a practicing attorney, I lived in Washington, D.C. I led a unit of about 20 attorneys who worked on legislative and regulatory matters for banks in an agency housed in the Department of the Treasury. And in the last few years I was practicing law, I was also preparing for ministry, and I told my boss, the chief counsel, Carolyn Buck, that in a few years, once I finished my training, I would be leaving my post. So she knew and I knew that we would need to find a replacement to lead that division. There was an attorney in our division who had so much potential to be that successor. I mean, she was brilliant. She knew legislative regulatory matters for banks backwards and forwards. And I kind of had my eye on her as the potential successor. But there was a problem. Despite all of her brilliance, this attorney, let's call her Vicky, that's a pseudonym. Despite all of Vicky's brilliance, she had a problem. She was, shall we say, very unkept. By which I mean, you would walk into her office and it was a disaster zone. I mean, it was like a hoarder's version of an office. Papers everywhere, stacked on her desk, literally inches high, every chair, every nook and cranny, papers here, papers. When you went into her office, you literally have to clear a space to sit down. Worse than that, she had a personal hygiene issue. Wore the same dress almost every day. And there was body odor. And behind her back, everybody knew it and everybody talked about it. So here's this brilliant person with incredible potential who's self-sabotaging. I went to my boss, the chief counsel, Carolyn, and said, you know, I think Vicky has the potential to be my successor, but, Carolyn nodded and said, I know what you're going to say. I said, what do you think I should do? Carolyn said, I think you should talk to her. Oh, I was hoping she would have some other brilliant strategy. Please don't make me talk to her. How do you say something like that to somebody? Please, you know, it's like those old commercials where somebody would be in a terrible situation, and it was an airline commercial, and they say, want to get away? It's like, I think I'll just retire and become a minister now. Carolyn, you can have this conversation. Carolyn said, I think you should talk to her. And I'm thinking, not me, I'm a wimp. I can't do this. I went home, I prayed about it, I thought about it. I thought about what Jesus did with Simon. I prayed for the courage the next week. I went into Vicky's office, cleared a space, sat down. And I said, Vicky, there's something I need to talk to you about. Kind of what Jesus did, right? And I waited. She said, okay, what is it? Like Simon said. I said, it's going to be kind of hard to say. But Vicky, I said, you have so much potential. You're brilliant. I think you could lead this division when I depart. But Vicky, there's a problem. Your office, it's a disaster. And not just that, but you wear that same dress most every day. And there's an odor issue. Now, I'm dying inside. And she is dying inside, right? She looks down. There's silence. She looks back up and says, I know. I know. But I can do better. She said, I can do better. And I will do better. And guess what? She did. Walked into her office a few days later, it was half clean. Another few days later, it was all clean. A miracle. A week later, Carolyn, my boss, comes into my office all excited, closes the door and says, have you seen what Vicky's wearing today? I said, yes. Carolyn, who was like business fashion goddess, Carolyn says, it's not going to win any awards, but it's professional. I said, yeah. And when I left, guess who became the leader of that division? Vicky. I'm so grateful that in all my wimpishness, God's Spirit gave me the strength to have that difficult conversation. Because someday in heaven, as we're crossing paths, she'll still be saying to me, thank you that you said what I knew but didn't want to face, that somebody needed to say. It would have been so easy for you to just let everybody talk behind my back, but you loved enough to have the hard conversation. That's what's at stake. That is the power of speaking the truth in love. And you and I, just like Jesus, have the power to give that gift to the people around us. So there are two questions I want to invite us to reflect on, each of us personally, as we move through this week. Question number one is, what's something that's hard to say that somebody in my life needs to hear? Do I love enough to share that? And number two, what's something hard to hear that somebody has said to me that I need to receive and open my heart to? Let's love ourselves and love others enough to have the hard conversations, because that's how we build beautiful relationships, the Jesus way. Amen.